Rick, I'm sure that a lot of people are not familiar with integrative medicine. Can you explain what it means when you say you are director of integrative medicine services?
Let me first talk about integrative medicine in a general way, a emerging discipline that has gone by many different names over the years. It was perhaps initially called holistic medicine, and then it was sometimes referred to as complementary and alternative medicine, or CAM, and you'll still see references to each, especially to CAM. The idea of integrative medicine is that it's not a this or the other, it's not a instead of conventional medicine, but rather an effort to integrate the best of all the different worlds of medicine. The worlds of medicine that I have some expertise in include nutrition, supplements and botanical medicine, mind-body medicine, and certain kinds of manual medicine, particularly a manual osteopathic technique called strain counterstrain that I do a lot of.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Rick, but I understand there's a national network of people who are interested in integrative medicine for the underserved. How did that come about?
The organization sprang out of a conversation at a meeting of the Integrative Medicine Interest Group at the Society for Teachers of Family Medicine meeting in the spring of 2009. During that conversation, somebody said, I'd really like to continue this discussion. I don't want this discussion to end when we leave this convention. How can we do that? And somebody else suggested conference calls, and a third person said, well, I have a telephone number already from conference calls, from free conference calls. Why don't we call this number on the first of next month and start talking? And those conference calls have, with an occasional skips, have occurred monthly ever since then, in about 3.5 years now. For the last 3 years, I've been coordinating them and hosting each call.
Is there any difference between integrative medicine for the underserved and integrative medicine for the rest of the population?
The historical model of integrative medicine being provided in the United States requires a lot of disposable income. The historical model is one-on-one meetings for longer periods of time than conventional medicines, often dramatically longer periods of time, with an individual practitioner who then needs to pay their own bills and buy their own groceries and needs to make a decent income for themselves. And that method of delivering integrative medicine certainly can't serve as the only method if we want to give integrative medicine to underserved populations. Our organization is focused particularly on group visits, on peer-to-peer education, which is dramatically more effective, and I suspect dramatically more effective, especially in underserved populations, where the doctor, whether they're wearing a white coat or not, seems like they're from a different world than the members of the disadvantaged community that they're mm-hmm. serving.
Now, can you give us an example from your own practice of how an integrative approach has benefited someone or helped them manage their health care?
The first patient that comes to mind is a middle-aged professional woman who came to see me very upset that lots of professionals were recommending cancer therapies for her rheumatoid arthritis. And she was talking about methotrexate in combination with prednisone and was already on the prednisone. And we, at our first, and this is a woman who had been encouraged to become a professional tennis player because she was so good at it and decided to go a different route besides that, but she'd remained very active both on the tennis courts and the hiking trails and in many, many other fashions throughout her life. She was perhaps in her young to mid-40s at that time, And she acknowledged in that first ever visit with me that she had so much pain walking that she planned her day. If she was at home for the day, she would plan her day to minimize the numbers of trips from her bedroom to her kitchen. And I talked to her about the anti-inflammatory diet. We talked about a number of different supplements that have direct anti-inflammatory effects. We talked about a mind-body approach to dealing with some of the issues that all of us have that bring us a lot of stress. And I admonished her to not stop any of her treatments while she began these things, but to see me again in 2 months or 2.5 months. And when I entered the room to see her at that revisit, at that recheck, 2.5 months or so later, she announced when I walked in the room, "Well, I didn't follow your advice, doctor." And then she grinned and she said, "I stopped all my other medicines. I went off the prednisone. I think maybe she had been on methotrexate for a while. I stopped the methotrexate, and I'm doing so much better that I'm back to hiking again, and I'm looking forward to starting to run." So she had responded that rapidly to a fairly major change in diet. Diet is a tough thing to change. Mm-hmm. If somebody's not motivated, I'm convinced that it's probably easier to change a man's religion than to change his diet. Mm-hmm. But she was very motivated. She was eager to do everything she could to improve her health and to not use medications that made her very nervous. And she has been one of my star patients.
Given your passion for this, how are you introducing integrative medicine to students and residents? And will you be able to work with students from other disciplines in the project at San Francisco General Hospital?
One of the primary intents of bringing, or one of the primary strategies for bringing integrative medicine into San Francisco General Hospital has been the idea of developing ways to authorize non-physician integrative practitioners to come in and work with patients.
Rick, thank you for taking the time to share what you are doing in integrative medicine for the underserved. It is very much in line with ACU's mission of making sure that patients we serve get the most comprehensive approach to their health and wellness.